Yeah, here we go now, baby. Right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Before You Bet, Aaron, live right now on the covers, YouTube and X channels. If you're watching on YouTube right now, make sure you smash that subscribe button right down there. A lot of great content here on the covers YouTube channel. If you guys want to participate in the show, very easy to do so. Hit up the live chat on YouTube and over on X. So feeling pretty good here today on the eve of football season. Fresh new haircut. My wife could barely keep her hands off of me. I barely got out the door for work here this morning. But a lot to talk about today. John Middlecoff will be by here in a matter of seconds to break down some of the week one action. We have our usual handful of Major League Baseball picks, and then NBA futures markets are starting to open up. John Mettler will be by in the back end of the show to discuss some markets, maybe jump right into. So let's get right into the action. Let's start like we will always be doing on Wednesdays during football season. Let's go down to our guy, John Middlecoff. John, how are we making out today?
You know, I got a fresh new haircut as well. So ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, saving a lot of money. That is the way to do it, John, down there. Okay, John, so let's discuss some of these big games. I'm going to throw some random stuff at you. Then we will get into your best bets here for week one. So let's start with the season opener in Kansas City, the Baltimore Ravens in town. Kansas City favored by 3 points. Now, a lot of people assuming the Chiefs offense will be better this season compared to last. Maybe the Ravens defense takes a little bit of a step back. Mike McDonald off to Seattle there. How do you think this game shapes up here?
You know, I was looking at it actually this morning, and one thing we learned last year that hadn't been the case in a lot of the Mahomes Reed era was the defense. And I think it was evident in that AFC Championship game. They were kind of like the Spider-Man meme where they were looking at each other. The Chiefs defense, the Ravens defense was the best. You could argue the Chiefs defense was the second best. And the way they were playing down the stretch, if anything, they were equals. So, I mean, the Chiefs bring everybody back. I mean, they're obviously they, you know, signed Chris Jones to a massive deal last year. McDuffie has established himself as one of the best DBs. And they have just done a great job drafting over the last several years of just – players on that side of the ball. So, and unlike the Ravens, fair or not, like Spagnuolo is never going to be a head coach. So they're just in this position, kind of like probably when me and you were kids, these teams in college and the pros would just have these coordinators for a long period of time. And those days kind of are over. So Andy and Spags, like, as long as Andy's coaching, Spags is going to be his defensive coordinator. So the continuity is pretty special with the Chiefs. Now, the new defensive coordinator for the Ravens is a former Ravens player. He's coached there literally his entire career beside the 1 year for Urban Meyer, and then he came right back. But like Mike McDonald was called boy genius for a reason. He was outstanding. And even if Orr turns out to be really good, I think it's fair to say there's going to be a little step back. We saw last year the Chiefs. Now, remember, Kelce got hurt in training camp, so he didn't play in the opening game, and they lost to the Lions. And it different scenario because the Lions had so much to prove, right? They were just on the doorstep of making the playoffs, and last year was such a big season for them. So, like, individual games aren't the end of the world for the Chiefs. I think they're kind of in, like, Kevin Durant Warriors mode, right? When you're 11, 12 games, peak at the right time, get into the playoffs and roll, they've proven they can win on the road. To me, this is a big game for the Ravens. I mean, the way it ended, and specifically for Lamar and Todd Monken, I mean, that game was just atrocious. On at home, to kind of get punked like that, only score 10 points. So there's tangible pressure. Now, it doesn't make or break your season, but, like, how are we supposed to take them seriously once the playoffs come? Because I think most of us are going to assume they're going to be a playoff team, whether they win the division or make a wild card. They're going to win double-digit games. But how could you bet against them ever on the road or at home if they're playing the Chiefs? If, you know, this is going to feel like a playoff game for them, 100%, and which is exciting. I mean, this is a fantastic matchup for to open the season. The Chiefs are kind of like a traveling rock star group now when you have the Taylor Swift element and Mahomes such a star, Kelsey such a star. Andy's clearly the best coach in the league. Hard to bet. I think we all agree on week one games.
It is.
You tend, like, I know me, I like underdogs, but it's hard. You know, the Ravens, Kansas City, the place is going to be going nuts. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to lay that many points against a good team, but it's hard for me to, I can't get, as someone that bet a lot of money on the Ravens in that AFC championship game, it's going to be hard for me to forget that moment.
Yeah, week one is tricky. A lot of guesswork. You know, you're looking at stuff from last year. Some teams come out flat. Some teams come out sloppy. The Bills last year in New York against the Jets just gave that one away. But new for week one is Friday Night Football. And the NFL is so good at this lately. You know, they're plugging in the Black Friday games, the game on Christmas Day. And there was always that big gap. They'd have the season opener on Thursday. Then those 2 days would feel like forever, just waiting for the games on Sunday. But now they plug this game in Friday night in Brazil. Eagles favored by 2.5 here over the Packers. Now, we know the wheels absolutely fell off for the Eagles in the second half last year. Kelsey has gone off the offensive line, but they plugged in a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. Do you think that these guys can right the ship here for the Eagles?
Yeah, they definitely get a huge upgrade at those two spots. I mean, Fangio's been one of the better defensive coordinators for a long time in all of football. And Kellen Moore's proven to be really good. You know, I think people nitpick. He doesn't run the ball enough. I think that's going to be difficult to not do this year, adding Saquon Barkley, even losing Kelsey, which might influence the tush push. But in terms of their run game, they have a highly paid, you know, Landon Dickerson makes a ton of money. Both their tackles are really good. Obviously, Jalen Hurts, if healthy, is a great runner. And the weaponry on that side of the ball, you know, we like the Packers, but they are really, really young, right? Jordan Love's only really had 8 good games. Their receivers are all on rookie contracts. They do add, you know, Josh Jacobs, who is a really good player, but, you know, he's a guy who's been injured a lot in his career. A.J. Brown, star wide receiver, highly paid. Devontae Smith, Heisman Trophy, drafted high, turned into a stud, highly paid. Obviously, Goddard, I mean, you can't pay much more money on the offensive side of the ball than the Eagles. So I think what makes this game difficult to handicap is it's not in Lambeau or Philly. I mean, it's in Brazil. So the travel, I don't know how long the flight is from Green Bay, but texting some people, I think it's like an 8-hour flight from Philly. That's just... it's just a difficult moment. Now, it's easier in the sense that it's not like week 6, right? So that they've had time because of the cutdown, you know, 10 plus days ago. You know, you're well rested. None of these guys, especially for the Eagles, played in the preseason. So it's kind of a weird spot. You know, it's these guys don't have any warm up beside practice. So you just never, it's not crazy to think they could be a little rusty, right? I mean, they just haven't played at game speed. I don't. This is a stay away for me. Nothing would shock me. Clearly, there is just more pressure because you got a coach on the hot seat in Philadelphia. So any game that they lose or going into it against, especially against a really high end playoff opponent, it's going to be magnified. But I don't know. I mean, I have a pretty good idea. Like, the Chiefs-Ravens game is going to feel like an old school guys getting crushed. This game, I don't know. I mean, you bring in Halfley from Boston College, which in theory they should be a lot better on defense, but I'm watching Boston College the other night against Florida State, and they look way better with Bill O'Brien. Well, of course, because Bill O'Brien, we can nitpick him all we want, but it's proven to be a good head coach. Now, being a coordinator is a lot different than being a head coach, but one problem for the Packers has not been the offense, right? They have been good since the McCarthy-Rodgers days. Even go back to the Favre and McCarthy, let alone last year with Jordan Love down the street. It's their defense. It's just hard to trust. Now, if they improve and they're a top 10, 12 defense, I think the Packers are going to be a major problem because LaFleur has proven to be, you know, one of the best offensive coaches in the league. That's not really even debatable at this point.
Do you think we've been too quick to anoint Jordan Love? Like the conversation last year towards the end of the year, and he was absolutely fantastic, and he very well might be a top 5 quarterback by the time the season's done. But the conversation went from, oh, look at the Packers, Favre, Rodgers. Now they're going to have Jordan Love for the next 15 years. And it wasn't really that big of a sample size. It was half a season. He was good, but how do you assess him coming into the season? Do you think he is right now a bona fide top 10 quarterback?
Well, he definitely was down the stretch. I mean, he was closer to like 4 or 5 than he was 10. And it was the way he played, right? The throws, the ability to, you know, to me, layered throws, the touch. He obviously has a powerful arm. Let's face it, he kind of looked like Aaron Rodgers. So to me, it wasn't like fake stats. It was you watched it, and this is what it's supposed to look like. And they have now a history of guys redshirting and taking their time and then hitting the ground running. So I expect him to be really good. Now, win the MVP and just become some Hall of Famer, obviously he has a long way to go. But it's hard, based on what we saw and the way he played, to not be really bullish on him moving forward. Now, they got aggressive. They paid him a lot of money. And because of the franchise, there's just, I mean, it's the Green Bay Packers. So it's like everyone's paying attention. But I'm really high on Jordan Love. I don't see how you could not be. But we've seen similar situations where guys are quote-unquote flashing the pans. I'd be shocked if that's the case, partly because head coach, play caller, the offensive weaponry, they have a great history of just finding good offensive linemen that you've never heard of until you've heard of them because they become longtime starters in the league. So I'm pretty high on the Packers this year.
Yeah, the Pack looks to be back with Jordan Love there at quarterback. Okay, so let's talk Monday Night Football. Things really coming together for the San Francisco 49ers over the past couple of days. You know, Ayuk and Williams get locked up. Christian McCaffrey back at practice. It looked like the Jets were possibly going to get a lesser version of the 49ers. That is not going to be the case here. 49ers favored by 4.5. And people are drinking the Kool-Aid on the Jets here, John. Once again, the Jets are favored to win the AFC East. I absolutely do not get it. It's been a couple of years now since Aaron Rodgers was a good quarterback in this league. And people will talk about that last year in Green Bay and say, well, Joe, he was injured. Absolutely, he was injured. And that's kind of the point. He's going to be 41 years old here in December. You know, we'll see what they did. They rebuilt the offensive line. We'll see how that works out. But when it's all said and done, do you think this will be a successful season for the New York Jets?
Well, if he plays all 17 games, they're definitely going to be competitive. Just because even if he is a shell of himself in terms of scrambling around, which I think is fair to assume, coming off an Achilles, we haven't seen him in the preseason, but just clips on NFL Network, it doesn't feel like he's quite as spry, which is very understandable, right? Coming off the Achilles injury, he's older. I think you saw it that last season in Green Bay. He didn't quite move as well, even in the regular season game. I know it was only 4 or 5 snaps last year on Monday Night Football. He's just not quite as quick as he was. Now, because of his arm strength, because of his knowledge, like he can still dominate from within the pocket. But one issue that I have with everyone anointing the Jets and that they're the favorite to win the division, he has the only reps he has with these guys is in practice. Think about the reps that he built up with his group in Green Bay, right? Practice, the games, even compare it to Purdy. Purdy now has 2 years as a starter. He has offseason and all the games his rookie year and then the full season last year of practice and games to build a rapport with Debo, Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey. Like, that's a lot of kind of, you just build the calluses and the understanding of your unit. How do the Jets have that? They just don't. Regardless how talented these guys are, a huge part, I would say, of team sports, let's say basketball and football, is history built over time. What makes Kelce and Mahomes so special? It's their knowledge of what's going to happen. And they've, even when Tyreek was with them, they had played together for a long period of time. We saw it with Brady forever, with Edelman, with Gronkowski. And that matters. Peyton Manning with his units over the years in Indy and then even in Denver. By the time they were in their third year, they were very, very good. And I think the unknown with the Jets, you know, we'll see if Reddick ends up showing up. But like, they traded for a guy who is really talented, and he's just not going to show up? Is he just going to pull a Le'Veon Bell? And if you told me he was there and he was all in, I'd be like, well, their defense just has so much talent. But I don't know. I mean, I think their defense can be a little overrated at times. And plus, it's hard if their offense is just up and down. Does anyone like their offensive coordinator? Now, you could argue that Rodgers could just go rogue, right? He can just call his own plays, which is true. But that creates kind of a weird dynamic, doesn't it?
Yeah, that coaching staff as a whole, the fact that Nathaniel Hackett still has a prominent position within the NFL, the last two seasons have been an absolute disaster for him. Robert Saleh, sometimes at these press conferences, he can't get out of his own way. I think it was last year after the Eagles game when Jalen Hurts gave that game away. He threw a pick six, as you recall. Robert Saleh says, we've embarrassed every quarterback that we faced the season. After playing Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, I think another good Dak Prescott was in the mix there as well. So, I am not high on the Jets. Jets plus 145 not to make the playoffs. One of my favorite bets going into the season. Okay, so before we get into your best bets, I have a question for you. I'm very interested in your answer as a former scout. So every year in the NFL, we see unknown players emerge to be extremely talented guys bordering on elite, getting into the Pro Bowl. Last year, going into the season, I don't think a whole lot of fans knew the name Puka Nacua. He's absolutely one of the best receivers in the NFL right now. So who do you think a candidate or two would be to go from no-name players right now to household names among football fans at the end of the season?
Yeah, it'd probably be some rookies, right? Guys in the second or third round, which we've seen in the past. It happened with Debo Samuel, DK Metcalf, and AJ Brown. Not that they weren't, like, you know, if you follow the SEC, they were famous guys. But I think when you look at, like, a Donnie Mitchell for the Colts, right, they draft him in the second round. He was a guy that many people thought could go in the first round. Like, I think he's going to have a really, really productive season and be a huge part of that offense. So he's a guy that even in training camp, they had some injuries. He played outside. He played inside. You know, now the question mark is going to be, can Anthony Richardson be an accurate passer? And it's I think the great part about the NFL is the Puka Nacua things come out of nowhere all the time. And sometimes also, like, a guy, like, I think C.J. Stroud can win the MVP. Now, he's already a household name, but it's a big deal to go from, like, he had a great rookie season to, like, he's the MVP of the NFL. And that can happen fast. Remember, it happened to Lamar. Like, he played when he came in halfway through his rookie season, and he was good, and he was electric. And the next season, it's like, I'm one of the best players in the NFL. And I think, like, that's one of my favorite bets because I like the Texans a lot. Like, I think MVP for Stroud is very on the table. Lamar, Mahomes, you know, for most of our lives, it's been like established guys. Even when I was a kid, like Steve Young, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, to Tom Brady. And I think in recent memory, we've seen these guys, Mahomes right away, Lamar right away. And both of them, I think those are two examples of young quarterbacks on really good teams. Because you can't, like, it's very, very difficult. Even if Jaden Daniels is a good player, his team's not going to be good enough, right? The surrounding cast. Defense, too. So you're down a lot. That means you're taking sacks. That I think C.J. Stroud, like, you're going to look up and be like, is this guy the MVP of the league? And I think there's a very good chance that C.J. Stroud wins the MVP this year.
Yeah, a lot of these young quarterbacks come into league, and some of these guys are set up to fail right off the bat.
Oh, no chance.
Drake May, like, that doesn't seem like a favorable situation right now. Now, that said, I don't think C.J. Stroud, if you looked at his situation coming into last season, I don't think anyone would have looked at that receiver group and been, like, blown away by it, and that's a credit to him, right? Like, a lot of these guys come in. Mahomes, he sat for pretty much the entire first year, but he was going into an Andy Reid coach team with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. But then again, you know, Joe Burrow, that offensive line stunk in the first year. Tua, his situation, his first 2 years, he was not set up to succeed. So, yes.
His coach didn't even like him.
Oh, yeah. That was we're going to talk a lot of Dolphins next week because they play in the Thursday nighter against the Bills. But, yeah, Tua is a guy. I think people kind of made their mind up about Tua a little bit too early, I think, right?
Well, I, yeah, and I think he explained it. The guy hated me. So when the coach hates you, and I'm not the biggest Tua guy in the sense of like paying him all this money, but he clearly is a top 15 quarterback in the NFL and a guy that you can compete with, you know, before it gets super cold. And luckily for the Dolphins, they take advantage of that. But Tank Dell is a good example, right? They draft him. No one's talking about him. By the end of the season, now going into the season, like he's a guy that you might look up and he has 85 catches and 9 or 10 touchdowns. Same thing with Nico Collins, right? So these guys, when you play with a good quarterback and you have talent as a wide receiver, by the end of the year, like, God, I like these two guys. Nico Collins, he gets a big contract extension. They love Tank Dell. So we go from, yeah, see who's C.J. Stroud playing with, to going, I really like his two young wide receivers. It can change fast. Where I would say that Patrick was unique, that he hits the ground running with Tyreek and Kelsey, who were already established players.
Okay, John, let's get into some of your week one best bets now. You told us you like underdogs this week. You have three of them. Let's start in Buffalo. We mentioned at the top of the show, the Buffalo Bills, they couldn't have been any sloppier week one last season. They gave that game away to the Jets there. In New York, the Arizona Cardinals, a +6.5 point underdog, and you like them to cover this number.
Yeah, let me preface it by saying this. I like the Bills a lot. I mean, I'm picking them to win the division. I think, obviously, it always depends on health. Last year, they were a mass unit by the end of the season. If they're healthy, I think, you know, they got one of the best players in all of football at any position in Josh Allen. They'll be fine. I do think week one, playing a guy like Kyler Murray, who now is healthy. I mean, we saw by the end of the season last year, he looked pretty darn good. Well, he's, I would imagine, going to look even better now physically. Just a tough player to play, right? Because of the mobility, because of the playmaking. And you're not used to the speed of games week one. It's why just overall I like underdogs. Plus, as the season goes on and you start playing bad teams, it's easy for teams to kind of go into the tank, not care as much. But everyone is so fired up for week one. And I just think it's very, very difficult to play a guy like Kyler early September. So to me, even if the Bills, you're up, you know, 10 points in the fourth quarter, he is just very, very capable of just doing some crazy stuff. And all of a sudden it's, you know, a 5-point game or a 3-point game when you go, God, I thought the Bills were kind of kicking their butt. So I just, you give me Kyler as almost a touchdown underdog week one. I just like that situation a lot.
Yeah, I think Arizona will be a very fun team this season.
Exactly. They can score. So think about it. They got James Conner, you had Marvin Harrison, and Trey McBride. So they got weaponry at basically every skill position on offense, including Kyler, who, you know, I would say right behind Lamar is truly one of the great kind of dual threats. His speed is so elite. He's got a huge arm, and he's one of those rhythm guys. Like, he kind of starts slow sometimes, and then all of a sudden a couple series, you're like, geez, is this guy the best player in the NFL for those two series?
Yeah, Murray's a guy that it seemed like people wanted to write him off a little bit. You know, he had the whole thing with not doing his homework and the Call of Duty, then he got injured. And I think when he came back last year, he seemed a little bit more mature. Like, sometimes we want to throw these guys out too early, but this is still a young man, extremely talented here too. So, yeah. Don't give up on him. The Cardinals should be a fun team. Okay, so last week you told us you were very high on the Denver Broncos coming in to the season. That extends here to week one up in Seattle, 6-point underdog.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough because you got a rookie quarterback on the road, but Seattle is being treated like some powerhouse here. They have a first-time head coach who everyone's just acting like is going to change this franchise. They've been winning 9 games. Seattle, it's not like he's taking over a 4-win team. And when Geno Smith is your quarterback, what are you going to do? Win 13? Like, that's not happening. He'd go 9-8 and the team could be better. And I just think huge underdog on the road, Sean Payton, who has the coaching advantage. You know, it's like, okay, McDonald's a great defensive coordinator, but he's playing a fantastic offensive coordinator who now has a quarterback who can do and function what he wants to be done. They just signed Patrick Surtain to a big contract today. So you got a guy who can at least, you know, neutralize some of their big playability with DK Metcalf. And yeah, I just like the Broncos in this spot with this many points. If you told me it was like +3, like, to me, the number is a couple points off. I just think you're getting too many points here to not jump on. And that's an overall logic I have. If you think a team is going to be solid, like I don't think the Cardinals are a playoff team, but I can see them winning 7-8 games. Same thing with the Denver Broncos. Like, yeah, I think they definitely could make the playoffs, but even if they win 8 games, they're going to be much more competitive than they were last year, especially early on. Remember, they gave up 70 points in a game to the Dolphins. Like, those days are over, and by the end of the season, they were playing a lot better. Now you get a quarterback who can run Sean Payton's system. Seattle, obviously, when they were rolling with, you know, Sherman and Pete, that place was so loud. It was like a LSU home field advantage. Like, I don't know if it's quite the same.
Okay, third underdog here, and let's go with the money line. The Cowboys, it's going to be a high-profile game in Cleveland for a couple different reasons, not just because it is the Dallas Cowboys. It's on Fox. It's going to be Tom Brady's first time on the broadcast, so ears will be wide open for that one. People may be sleeping on the Cowboys here a little bit coming into the season. I saw that the under on their win total was the most popular bet at a number a sports books. Now, I'm not going to take the Cowboys to go on a run in the playoffs. We know what they do in the playoffs, but they've been a really good regular season team, and we have them here as an underdog taking on the Browns. A lot of question marks here. I think if you're running that Cleveland team, I think you got to be scared shitless that Deshaun Watson might be shot. This guy hasn't been good since 2020, but either way, you like the Cowboys to win this one outright.
Yeah, to me, this is a simple one. You know, coach quarterback. Right? Stefanski's a good coach. He's proven that now. He's resurrected the Browns. But I despise their quarterback situation. Right? I mean, he's the question marks, one, just with his health, and then two, with his play. So you add Mike Zimmer to the defense. The Cowboys defense has been really good under Dan Quinn. It's going to look a little bit different because Zimmer, you know, in his double A gap blitzes. But I would expect them to be really good. They're coming in this spot, like you said. For the last couple years, there's been a lot of hype on the Cowboys, and now it's flip-flopped. Everyone's the anti-Cowboys. So it's an easy spot for McCarthy to be like, everyone thinks we suck. Dak Prescott has now proven over and over, like you said, we can dispute him in the playoffs. I would not bet on him. But in the regular season, the dude's putting up huge numbers. He's rattling off 12-win seasons, and everyone acts like McCarthy stinks. Like, I got news for you. He's pretty good. He's good coaching quarterbacks. He's good regular season coach. And it's been a while since he's done some stuff in the playoffs, but I love McCarthy, the Cowboys, Dak, the hype of Tom Brady kind of in this spot. The Browns have a lot of talent on their roster, but they have a lot of injuries. I mean, Nick Chubb is obviously not back from that devastating injury. Their offensive line has some health question marks. But again, it goes back to the quarterback. Like, is he any good? And I think based on what we've seen, he hasn't been a good player in a long time. It's not like, you know, he had a rough little stretch. Like Lamar had a bad game, but no one thinks he's like going to trend down. This guy's had bad season after season. He was MIA, missed a year. He missed all those games from suspension. And then when he did play, he's really had one good half for the Browns in his short tenure. And I can't get behind him.
Yeah, we are aligned. The Browns did a deal with the devil, and it is not working out with Deshaun Watson there for them. Okay, John, thank you for joining today. A quick recap of his picks. A couple underdogs here, three of them. Arizona to cover, Denver to cover, and Cowboys to win outright in Cleveland. So, John, best of luck with all of those bets. Awesome chat with you today. I look forward to you joining next Wednesday. We'll do a little recap. We'll do a little deep dive here on my Miami Dolphins. Big game for them on Thursday night versus the Bills. So best of luck with your bets and enjoy the week one action.
Have a great week. See you, buddy.
Yes, sir. All right. What a great chat with John. Half hour absolutely flies by. A lot of great insights from John Middlecoff there. Okay, let's bring in another John. All guys whose names start with the letter J. Josh, there's two Johns now. There's me, Joe, in case you guys did not know my name. So a lot of J's. Any other? Jake Butt. He's going to be on the show tomorrow. A lot of J's around here. Hopefully that does not confuse any of the viewers. Mettler, what's up, man? How we doing?
Good, good. I will give it out a little bit here. Well, first of all, you put out that tweet about fantasy football, how you used to do all this research and now you just do it on your phone. And then I quoted and I said, I'm not even playing in a fantasy league. And there was actually, I was surprised. I thought I was going to get killed a little bit. And there's a lot of people saying they feel the same way. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, interest in the season-long fantasy league seems to have cooled off for a lot of people. A lot of people say it's related to the popularity of betting. There's more instant gratification with your bets. You know, you place a bet, you watch the game, and you get your result. Whereas with fantasy, it's, you know, the season-long thing. I view it as a fun way to kind of bullshit with your friends. Like when you get a bit older and you don't get to see your buddies as much as you used to, it kind of gives you an excuse to socialize online, I guess, with them and doing the trades and stuff like that. But yeah, I still play in one. I used to organize a league. I do not recommend that to anybody. I do not recommend organizing any type of, whether it be a picks pool, a survivor con, collecting money from your shithead friends. No, thank you. I have no interest in doing that. But yeah, I do one season long and I'll do a DraftKings every single week of the season, which I love to do. Okay, three picks for Major League Baseball. How about that Phillips one there from yesterday? That hit, I had him over 2.5 earned runs. He gets one out. He had 0.1 innings pitched and he allowed this poor guy, allowed like 6 earned runs against the Blue Jays there. And the Blue Jays still went on to lose that game. Tells you everything you need to know about the state of that franchise. But three picks for me for Major League Baseball. Rattle these off. And then we're going to get into some NBA talk here with John. As you know, he is our number one NBA guy. How many units last season in the NBA, Mettler, did you do?
Just for the player props, I finished plus 60 point something. I don't remember the point, but plus 60.
Plus 60 units. John is the guy, the man for NBA player props. Okay, let's get into it. A good old-fashioned full-game money line bet. Let's go with the Houston Astros here, -136 in Cincinnati against the Reds. Big pitching advantage here for them, both starters and in the bullpen. So Spencer Arrighetti on the bump here for the Astros. He's absolutely dominating, a 1.95 ERA with 3 double-digit strikeout performances in August. He's been especially strong on the road. His last 3 starts on the road against the Phillies, Orioles, and Red Sox, 3 pretty good offenses, just 2 total earned runs allowed in those 3 games, so 30 strikeouts. Nick Martinez on the bump here for the Reds. This is a guy, he spent some time in the bullpen, spent some time as a starter. He really should be in the bullpen. Not going very well for him lately, a 6.75 ERA over his last 4 appearances. And then a big bullpen advantage here for the Astros as well. I'll take them to bounce back after a loss yesterday. Next up, a first 5 run line bet. So the Cubs need to be leading at the end of 5 innings to win this bet. F5, -135 at home here. Domingo Herman, remember him? Former Yankees pitcher. Not going very well for him. Absolute disaster here. Since joining the Pirates, a 6.11 ERA in 6 appearances, 12 walks, just 15 strikeouts, taking on a Cubs team that is absolutely smashing right-handed pitching, first in OPS versus righties over the last 2 weeks. Now, he faced them back on August 26th. He got absolutely shit-canned for 8 earned runs in that one. Shota Imanaga on the mound here for the Cubs. Pirates really struggling against left-handed pitching and on the road. He shut them out over 7 innings of work earlier in the season. And maybe a little bit of a sneaky one here. Sonny Gray on the mound here for the Cardinals in Milwaukee, taking on the Brewers. Going to go over 4.5 hits allowed, -135. So he's not good on the road. Really good at home. Not good on the road. His ERA on the road is 3 runs higher compared to at home. And check this out. So the number's at 4.5 for the hits allowed. He's allowed 5 or more hits in 9 straight games on the road. Brewers hitters have had some success against him. They combined for a .292 average. He allowed 7 hits against him his last time pitching in Milwaukee, which was earlier this season. Let's go 3-0, baby. Okay, Mettler, some Let me recap those. Actually, producer Mick, I'll recap those at the end of the show. But there, they're there if you guys want to look at them now. NBA. So not a whole lot of people looking to jump on NBA future stuff, and maybe you should. As we always say, you get in early. That's when you're going to get the best of the number. Now, big picture stuff, the Celtics are a big favorite to win the NBA championship. I don't think they're going to repeat. I think they're going to have a lot stiffer competition in the Eastern Conference this year. But a couple of markets in particular you wanted to discuss for a very high-profile player. Break this down for us.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about – so I had some tweets about this before I left for vacation. We didn't have a show or anything. We give a lot of picks on this show. This is me telling you not to place a bet. So it's Victor Wembanyama, most improved player. He's sitting about plus 1,000. He's one of the favorites. For Wembanyama, it's just even like you're just listening to what John Middlecoff said, and he was talking about CJ Stroud making the jump from Rookie of the Year to MVP. Well, if you're Wembanyama, the most improved player in the NBA, it never ever goes to a second-year player. It just doesn't. You're expected to improve, especially the guy who is a first overall pick, a generational talent, and he won Rookie of the Year. Like, what are you improving on? The last person to do this was Monte Ellis. He did in 2006-2007. He was a second-round pick, didn't play very high minutes in his rookie year, and then he went from 6.8 points per game to 16.5 points per game. Wembanyama averaged 21.6 points. He averaged 10.6 rebounds. Like, what jump is he making that makes you think he's most improved? The jump would probably put him into MVP talk, right? Like, you already averaged 21 points. If you're looking at this guy and you're like, okay, he averaged 14.6 rebounds in his rookie season, you're like, I see it. It doesn't go to a second-year player, but maybe he's the exception, and he jumps it to like 25 and 13. You know, if he jumps it to 25 and 13, he was 21.6 and 10.6. He led the NBA in blocks. To me, that it's just not the market. If he was, he's also the favorite. If he was like 200-1, and maybe he bucks the trend and he does get it as a second year player, I could see the argument, but not as the favorite. I just wanted to put that out there. I just really don't think he's worth a bet at all in that market. So that's, I wanted to talk about that one.
So who was it? Tyrese Maxey won most improved player this past. I do not agree with the criteria for this award whatsoever. We've talked about this before. It should be a guy you've never heard of. This guy, he averaged 4.2 points, and then all of a sudden, he's developed into a pretty good starter, averaging close to 20 points. Not a guy who, hey, Tyrese Maxey's really good. He's going to be a future all-star, and he has a good season. And then he has an even. I do not agree with the criteria for the most improved. I remember as a kid playing the sports, the most improved would typically go to the kid that didn't know how to throw a ball, and then the next season he could throw the ball and make a little bit of contact with the bat, right? But, it is what it is. There was another one for Wemby you wanted to discuss?
So he is the favorite for Defensive Player of the Year. So I just wanted to go through these Wembanyama markets. Again, it's not a bet. I'm just wanting to talk about it because he's obviously very popular. A lot of people are interested in betting for him.
Minus 200.
Exactly, Joe. Exactly. Minus 200. And it, like, it's minus 200. You're not even in the, like, the preseason hasn't even started. You're laying minus 200. You're sitting on this the whole year. The NBA has that 65 game minimum in place, right? Like, if you don't play 65 games, you're not eligible for a voting award. That's not the case for Rookie of the Year. I mean, he did play the 65 games last year, but this is a problem for him this year. Like, he has to play those 65 games, and you're minus 200. Do I think he's going to win? Probably. Is he the best defender in the NBA? Yeah, probably. This will probably be his award for the next 5, 6, whatever, however many years. But in betting, it's all about the price. And the minus 200 to me is kind of like, I can't imagine sitting on that, especially with that 65 game minimum in place. The other thing too is Defensive Player of the Year, there is an element of like team success. And there's a couple guys like Alex Caruso, OG Anunoby, Joel Embiid. All those guys had higher defensive EPMs last year than Wembanyama, and they're on contenders. The Spurs are still trying to like even get into the playoffs. So like, again, when you're combining all that and you're looking at a minus 200, I will say, so like I'm saying, don't bet the most improved. I think if he wins an award, it will be the Defensive Player of the Year. I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet on the minus 200. They haven't released it yet. They did put it out last year, but like 2 weeks before the season. You can bet on who would make first team all NBA. So that was kind of, it's the top five players in the NBA, right? So that's kind of the spot. If you think he's going to improve, that's the market I would attack him in. He gets in that top five where he's kind of like on the fringe of that MVP talk. That's where I think that's where I think the best bet will probably end up being on Wembanyama for a future bet.
It can backfire on you so badly if you're betting these big favorites in player award markets. I remember Mike Trout was always like for such like 3 or 4 years, he'd be like a minus money favorite to win MVP. And even if he did go on to win it, congratulations. You put $100 on him at minus 110 and you waited the 8 months and you won your bet, right? Look at that Spencer Strider for the Braves. I think he was close to even money to win National League Cy Young Award, and he got injured very early in the season. Now, of course, Aaron Judge, I think he might have been plus 110 range to win AL MVP, and I tell everyone, don't waste your money. That backfired on me a little bit. I think Judge having a fantastic season. We'll see if that carries over to the playoffs. I have my doubts about the New York Yankees. Okay, John, let's wrap with something fun here. We see people do these from time to time. It usually they get some publicity on social media when it's on the final leg. It's a championship parlay where you see someone pick this team to win the World Series, this team to win the Super Bowl, national championship, Stanley Cup, whatever. You hear about the ones that win, obviously. You don't hear about the ones that lose, but you put one together very timely here with the NFL season kicking off tomorrow, the college football season just starting up here, the NBA training camps open later this month. Write this one down for us.
Yeah, I'll give a shout out to Jingles because it's kind of inspired here by Jingles because he gave out some division futures parlays yesterday. And I was like, oh, I want to throw out a parlay here for that kind of combines football and basketball. So I went with the Georgia Bulldogs to win the national championship, the Baltimore Ravens to win the Super Bowl, and the Oklahoma City Thunder to win the NBA championship. So I've done these in the past. I used to place quite a few of them way back then. And I did kind of use these three markets. I went with the national championship, Super Bowl, and NBA finals. It really only makes sense to parlay them if they're running at the same season. Otherwise, if they're opposite seasons, it doesn't really make sense to put them in a parlay. But anyways, in terms of college football, Georgia, to me, if you watch before you bet the last 2 weeks, anyone who comes on and talks to Joe and Joe says, who do you think is going to win that championship? They all pretty much say Georgia is the best team. But when you're looking at like a standalone bet, like plus 280, plus 250, not really exciting, right, to lay a bunch of money on them. Do I think they're the best team? Absolutely. Everyone kind of agrees with that. So like in this model, I think it makes sense. It's just like people don't really want to lay a plus 250, but you need winners. And those first two have to win, right, before we get to the last one there. And then with Oklahoma City, you can kind of play around with what you have. The second one, I went with the Ravens. I know people are down on them. I kind of view this when I put these together. I look at it almost like a golf tournament. Like, I feel like there's so many times when you're betting on golf, and to me, there's certain people who, like, they win or they lose. And I don't want a top five guy. I don't want a guy who's going to make the NFC Championship, AFC Championship. I need a team that can win. And I think the Ravens kind of fall. I know they haven't yet, but I feel like they fall in that category where it's like boom or bust. Could Lamar get injured? Could their season derail? Absolutely. Could we lose the whole bet? Sure. But if it hits, I just feel like they have what it takes. Like, they've kind of taken their lumps just because Lamar Jackson hasn't won yet. Doesn't mean he can't. Last but not least, I went Oklahoma City Thunder. That's the one. I think Oklahoma City, like adding Alex Caruso, Isaiah Hartenstein, and then you also have that core together. You have the coach of the year, Mark Dagno. Like Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, they're only getting better. I think the Thunder are a stud. They're loaded. They have so much talent across the board, and I think they're only getting better. So I'm really happy with the Thunder as the last leg because I feel like they won't be a team that like completely flops on me if we get there. They also have all that draft capital. So even if they suffer a couple injuries, they could go correct their roster if they had to. So I feel like if we get to that last leg, I'll have something with the Thunder. So I put the Thunder last.
Yeah, no disagreements with Georgia, obviously. They look fantastic in that second half against Clemson. Baltimore Ravens, I don't love them, but it's not going to be Patrick Mahomes winning the Super Bowl every single year. And I think a lot of the time, you know, we'll see these quarterbacks, Lamar, Dak Prescott, these guys, they underperform in the playoffs. And the opinion is, well, they're never going to win it. Sometimes people get over the hump. I think it took Peyton Manning 8-9 years to win a Super Bowl. John Elway didn't win till the very end of his career when he went back to back. That's two of the best quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. As for the OKC Thunder, I like that. Sometimes it takes these teams that are built from the ground up. The original version of the Golden State Warriors before Kevin Durant joined them, they had some growing pains. As you recall, they fired Mark Jackson. They brought Steve Kerr in to get them aligned. Even the Boston Celtics, it took them a while to get over the hump there too. So I don't even know if you would call it growing pains for the Thunder. They had a good season two seasons ago. I think they were kind of on the cusp of getting into the playoffs, and they got in. They made some noise. They had a fantastic regular season there as well. That roster taking shape really strong for them. And like, they got that ammo, all those first round draft picks. They can make a big deal at the deadline here. Maybe for Joel Embiid. I've been predicting that one for a while. I don't think that one's going to work out anymore.
That one's over. They got it's Chet Holmgren, Isaiah Hartenstein now. They gave Hartenstein a bunch of money. So, but that it was, they could literally go get anyone. They have so many draft picks. But they don't, the problem is they don't need anyone. That's the problem really that they're facing. But that's a good, that's why they're in the parlay. I think they're a really strong contender.
Indeed. Okay, let us recap my Major League Baseball picks. If you guys are just tuning in, I like the Astros to win tonight in Cincinnati, -136. Cubs, first five run lines, so they need to be leading at the end of five, -135. And Sonny Gray, over 4.5 hits allowed. He's allowed at least five hits in, where's my stat here, in 9 straight games on the road. If you missed the segment with John Middlecoff, that was a great half hour of football conversation leading into week one. So you can go back and watch that. This replay is available whenever. He gave out his best bets. He likes the Arizona Cardinals to cover +6.5 in Buffalo, the Denver Broncos +6 in Seattle, and the Cowboys to win outright. A bunch of road dogs here this weekend. They are in Cleveland. And I should also remind, this show is available to listen to via podcast. I don't know if you guys know what a podcast is or not, but you can get them on your phone. Very convenient if you want to listen to it on the way home from work, at the gym, whatever, on your nightly run. We are here for you in whatever format you prefer. So shout out to the guys in the live chat, our very own Josh Ingles in there. He's going to be back with us tomorrow, breaking down the Thursday night football game. Nick Newport Jr. And they're tearing it up. Anthony, Ryan Jeffrey in there as well. Shout out to the fellas. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Mettler, I appreciate you joining today. Best of luck to everybody with your bets here. We're on this is Eve. Football season Eve. NFL starts tomorrow. I cannot believe it. We've been talking about this season for months now. It gets underway. We're going to be giving out a bunch of picks for that. Jake Butt's going to be by with a look at week two's college football action. So you're not going to want to miss the show tomorrow. So thank you guys for tuning in. Best of luck with your bets tonight. And we will see you again tomorrow.